Getting organized. That's the challenge facing Iowa's two major political parties. With 2012's general election only 13 months away, political strategies are moving quickly into place. And we're getting details from the chairs of Iowa's two major political parties, Democrat Sue Dvorsky and Republican Matt Strawn, on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Iowa Bankers Association for personal, business, and commercial needs. Iowa banks help Iowans reach their financial goals.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you policymakers and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating 41 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television, this is the Friday, October 7th edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
Well, if you like politics, you've got to love Iowa these days. Take your choice. You'll find campaigns underway with county, state, and national implications with issues to match. Nationally, there's a game going on that's somewhat a combination of chess and chicken. States envying Iowa's attention and influence with the First in the Nation presidential preference caucuses are now jockeying for earlier slots in the primary calendar, pushing Iowa and New Hampshire still earlier, maybe into the holidays. Iowa's incumbent congressmen campaigning for re-election are getting acquainted with new districts while still representing constituents in the former districts. Population shifts forcing redistricting and eliminating one of Iowa's current five congressional districts. Same goes for the Iowa House and Senate districts. Republicans currently holding a 20-vote majority in the House, but currently down two votes in the Senate, where Democrats are holding control. But, and here's another Iowa drama again, a special election in northern Linn County next month, jeopardizing Democrats' control of the Iowa Senate. Well, there's far more, but I think it's clear that Iowa's two major political party chairs are managing full agendas these days. Democrat Sue Dvorsky and Republican Matt Strawn. Welcome back to Iowa Press.
Thanks, Dean.
We're going to talk about all of those things. And across the Iowa Press table, senior political writer for the Associated Press, Mike Glover, and Radio Iowa's news director, Kay Henderson.
Chairman Strawn, let's start with you. The biggest question out there is the Iowa Republican caucuses. What can we expect? We've had Florida say they're going to go on January 31st. We've had Nevada say they're going to go on January 14th. Where is Iowa in all this?
Well, it's great to be here, and it's great to start on a topic that probably the only one that we'll actually agree on during the program is making sure that Iowa retains its first-in-the-nation status that we've had for decades, but also that we make sure that we're playing a role in putting sanity in this process. Mm-hmm. I think one thing I hear from Iowans as I talk to them, and I talk to Republican leaders nationally, is that we want to make sure that this is a process that still begins in January. I don't think anyone wants to see the process go into the Christmas and New and the holiday season.
Right.
So when Nevada set a January 14th date, what that set in motion for your viewers who may not know New Hampshire law, their Secretary of State is directed by statute not to set a primary date 7 days before a like contest.
Mm-hmm.
And if he views that Nevada's caucus is a like contest, that raises the prospect of New Hampshire having a date no later than Saturday, January 7th.
Mm-hmm.
So we may very well be in a situation like we were 4 years ago, where there was less than that 8-day window between Iowa and New Hampshire. But I know talking to Republican leaders, I had a statewide call with my executive committee Thursday night, and we were almost uniform in making sure that we did everything necessary to keep the Iowa caucuses in January. But we're still continuing to talk with our counterparts in New Hampshire. I had an opportunity to speak with Secretary Gardner yesterday, and we're going to keep those lines of communication open to hopefully make sure we can reach resolution that doesn't push this into December.
So what's the likely date?
Well, I'm not going to have a date yet today, Mike, but we're still working through those conversations with our counterparts in New Hampshire. But we're going to do everything we can to avoid pushing the caucuses into later this year.
Ms. Dvorsky, Democrats and Republicans, you don't have a caucus contest this year, but Democrats and Republicans traditionally go on the same day. Will that happen again this time?
It absolutely will. We don't have a nominating contest, but what we've got is the necessity to organize Democrats across the state to get ready for what's coming in 2012. Matt has done a great job with this, and this has been a really difficult and tough slog. But, you know, there was a great gathering last night where some old hands got together and talked about the history of this and how critical it is. And I think that Often people who don't understand this process as well as we may all understand it take the tone that it is a bit of a game and it's a bit of a political, you know, back and forth.
Right.
But honestly, this is the process that starts the election of the president of the greatest and most important country in the world. It is not for amateurs. It's not beanbag. And so our good friends and partners in New Hampshire and we here in Iowa understand the enormity of this thing. This is not just a privilege we have, it's a responsibility. And so I commend Chairman Strawn, I commend Chairman Priebus, and I know that they're working closely with our good friends in New Hampshire. And I know that firewall of going into the previous calendar year, I am confident that will not be breached.
Chairman Strawn, you have a lot of people who are very interested in when this caucus date is going to be. What kind of time pressure do you face to say, okay, candidates, this is when it's going to be? When do you need to tell them that?
Well, sooner rather than later. Secretary of State Gardner has said that New Hampshire won't set their date for at least another couple weeks. I've indicated both publicly and privately that Iowa may need to go sooner than that because it's not just letting our candidates know.
Right.
But we need to organize up to 1,700 precincts around the state, and that's reserving community buildings, that's reserving elementary schools, gymnasiums. And there's a lot of lifting that goes on organizationally with the caucuses, in addition to letting, of course, our candidates know exactly what the date will be. So I'm hoping sooner rather than later we can have a date and some resolution on this.
So because, within a week or so, you think you'll have a date?
You know, I would hope to very shortly. But it's imperative, as Sue talked about, for the process, for the voters, for the candidates. If we can keep this in January and start the process in January of 2012, I think it not only serves the long-term best interests of the presidential nomination process, but it also, during this current cycle, I think it benefits the voters and the candidates to do so as well.
Well, speculation we hear is January 3rd is a likely date.
Yeah, well, I'm not prepared to talk about a date today, and I don't believe Chairwoman Dvorsky is either, but we're going to continue to monitor the situation and do what's necessary to prevent us caucusing while wrapping Christmas gifts.
Mrs. Dvorsky, last time around, Democrats and Republicans in Iowa waited around for New Hampshire's Secretary of State, who's been in that office since, I believe, 1976, to set the date. Would you advise Republicans to set the date now and not wait for him?
I would advise Matt to continue on the path that he's on, which is a path of continuing to try to work this thing out in a collegial and partnership manner. We didn't announce till October 28th last time. So there is still some time. You know, we are not up against the worst of it. But I absolutely concur with Matt on this. You know, it's 1,700 precincts. It is a heavy lift for the county activist to get this thing set up. So we are caucusing in every precinct as well as they are. A different process, no doubt. But hoping that we still have a little time.
You mentioned, Mr. Strawn, the 7-day requirement in New Hampshire law that they hold their primary before a similar event.
Correct.
Isn't there an Iowa law in this regard as well?
Well, there is, but using, I guess, recent history as a guidepost, in 2008, there was only a 5-day window between Iowa and New Hampshire. Iowa went on January 3rd and New Hampshire went on January 8th. And I think both the Democrat and Republican caucuses had record turnout here in Iowa, and the New Hampshire primary did not want for attention either. So using historical precedents, a shorter window is something that has been done, and it also hasn't really dampened turnout or enthusiasm.
Tell me a little bit more about what you had in this discussion with your Central Committee members.
Well, I was looking for clear guidance on what their preference was relative to a date, and almost uniformly, Republicans around the state want to make sure that we're going in January because they understand trying to push this into the holiday season doesn't serve either the best interests of Iowa long-term, nor does it serve the best interests of the voters and the candidates.
Kay, you have another question?
Well, Dean mentioned both chess and chicken. There's also fruit basket upset, which is an old game. As the RNC, in this case, seems to be a toothless tiger, Mr. Strawn, what sort of sanctions should the states who have leapfrogged ahead, suffer?
Well, first and foremost, relative to Florida, they will lose half of their delegates at the convention in Tampa next August. The other thing I have called on, Florida actually set up a special committee, a super committee, if you will, to actually set the date for their primary. And that had the Speaker of the Florida House, their majority leader. Every one of those Republicans on that special committee in Florida should be denied credentials, seating, any speaking involvement in Tampa. That's the bare minimum. Now, party rules, though, anything that happens from this point on has to happen prospectively at a future nomination process. So it happened in 2016. I would recommend, and we've had a conversation with some early states, one option would be if a state violates the primary calendar, they would forfeit all their delegates, potentially to be spread out and reallocated among those early states that were forced to move up.
Well, and then they get the big prize. They get to host the convention in Tampa.
And that's something when Chairman Steele made the decision to select Tampa, which we, of course, did at the RNC as well. Going forward, I would strongly recommend and advise having a clause in that agreement that the state that hosts the convention also make sure that they are complying with the rules of the primary and caucus calendar.
Speaking of, you had a comment, Ms.
Well, I was just going to point out that that's one of the things that's important for us all to remember. Iowa and New Hampshire have been put in this spot. And that's why I think that Matt's doing the right thing by continuing to work with our friends and partners in New Hampshire. We've been put in this spot. It's, you know, there's no good solutions left anymore. There are priorities, you know, keeping it in 12. But there is no good solution. What he's looking for from his exec board is trying to get, where's your priorities? What's the worst? You know, what's the thing you want to avoid most? So I think that it's important for us to remember this isn't any move that we made.
You've been taking the global long-range view here in our conversation here. Isn't this also, Mrs. Dvorsky, threatening Iowa's influence in this caucus and in future caucuses? If this continues to happen in succeeding years, doesn't Iowa lose the prestige and the influence of having first-in-the-nation caucuses?
Well, honestly, I would suggest, and I may actually have to throw this to Matt, because I think, actually, this compression actually highlights, certainly in this time, it really highlights the need here in Iowa for these candidates to do well, because if you compress that schedule. Now, you know, in 16, we always, this is a calendar and a conversation and a battle that we fight all the time. Somebody has to go first. I would submit that the professionalism and the seriousness with which we take this is a good reason for why we do go first. And I think that one of the things that will work well for Matt or whoever follows him or me or whoever follows me to go to the DNC and the RNC and say, this works. I think that that is something that we do every 4 years and have to struggle with.
I don't quite see, Mr. Strawn, how this can enhance Iowa's influence, because if you're truncating the nomination process with each state, it gives and candidates can't spend as much time in Iowa. They've got to worry about New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, and everybody else in a very short period of time, not spending as much time in Iowa.
Well, actually, I would argue the inverse, Dean. I think it's almost ironic in trying to exert more influence over the process. Florida, they may well have their decisions greatly narrowed by the time it gets to Florida, because if you don't do well in Iowa, you're not going to be part of the conversation going forward. And right now, Iowa, when you look at the polling in the Republican caucus, it is wide open. And all the attention is going to be who is gaining momentum at the end of the Iowa caucuses and who is going to be able to use the caucuses as a springboard. And right now, you don't necessarily have that in the New Hampshire primary, where there's great uncertainty as to exactly who the first, second, or third people are. So I think there's going to be tremendous attention and focus on Iowa. And if you don't do well in the Iowa caucuses, it really is, I don't want to say it's a death knell, but it's going to make it very difficult to recover given the compressed schedule.
Mr. Strawn, I'd like to take one step back and look at reality. The reality is I haven't seen a lot of candidates running around Iowa. Mm-hmm. Candidates, as Dean has suggested, are paying attention to Iowa, but they're paying attention to a lot of other states very early on in the process. You talked about sanctions against states that violate this. That's never happened in the past. There have been sanctions in the past, but in the real world we all live in, Florida is a very important state in a general election, and nobody wants to anger Florida in heading into a general election. So they may sanction them during the primary season, but they go away after that. What makes you think it'll be different this time?
Well, I'm going to address the first part of your question, actually, when you talked about the candidate activity in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make sure we're comparing apples to apples. The same thing is happening in Iowa that's happening in South Carolina, that's happening in New Hampshire and the other early states, is that there's a general lower level of candidate activity than we all saw in the historic 2008 caucus season.
Right. Why is it?
Well, I think it's the demands of fundraising. That's demand of, you know, a schedule that was created to allow for four early states. And quite frankly, it's been an unsettled field right now. Different candidates have different strategies on how often they're going to be in the early states. So I think if you're comparing Iowa to the other states, we're doing just fine with the amount of candidate attention and visits that we're getting. In fact, I would argue if you look at the empirical data, we're seeing more candidate activity than any of the other early states. But specific to your point on sanctions, we need to make sure at the RNC, and I've had this conversation with Chairman Priebus, that the rules are what they are and mean it. Put some teeth into them and enforce them.
Ms. Dvorsky, what's your assessment of what you've seen among the Republican field? Some of us think that the level of activity we've seen in this caucus campaign has been lesser than in past years. What's your take on it?
Well, I do think that it's not a state secret that the front runner, the putative front runner, and then he sort of slips in and out. But Governor Romney's absence from this conversation, I think, is becoming more problematic, I think, for the process.
From the conversation of campaigning intensely in Iowa, is that what you're saying?
Yes. And I think, you know, whatever's going on with the calendar, it's amazing to me that he's not coming.
Well, if you look at history, in the last election cycle, the eventual Republican nominee, John McCain, took a pass on Iowa.
He did.
And Mitt Romney, the putative favorite this time, is apparently doing the same thing. Isn't that setting a precedent?
In the last election cycle, Barack Obama blew this state out. Now, you know, there are different lists of the battleground states. You know, last night Yepsen said there were going to be six at the end. I've heard up to 10 or 11. But on every single one of those lists, I was on it. This isn't just about, I think, for Mitt Romney, and I think for the eventual, whoever the eventual Republican nominee is. This isn't just about first in the nation in the caucuses. This is about last in the nation on that night and on that weekend. And I just find it astonishing that candidates who are purporting to be front runners aren't here. I think it's going to be problematic for whoever that candidate is at the end to come back. I think one of the mistakes that Senator McCain made, you know, it was his vote against the farm bill was his vote against the farm bill. But I think there were a lot of people who thought that at least had he been here, had he known more, had a personal relationship with people and understood parts of that, that would have stood him in good stead.
Final quick question about this caucus date discussion. When it boils down to it, for the caucus date for the next go-round in 2016, doesn't it matter who's in the White House? If the president likes the caucuses, Iowa will be first. If the president doesn't, Iowa will no longer be first. Isn't that the reality, Mr. Strawn?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, of course the president has, I guess, a major influence in the position there. But I'm hoping for us it's a moot point because we'll have a Republican incumbent that is running in 2016.
Barack Obama's win is going to mean that the caucus discussion in 2016 is not nearly as fraught with disaster. They've worked for him before, they'll work for him again.
And here's the one point on this, and, you know, again, there are very few things that Barack Obama and George W. Bush have in common. But the one thing they do have in common is their path to the White House started by winning the Iowa caucuses. So any suggestion that Iowa is not a state that picks presidents or isn't relevant is just nonsense in revisionist history.
Let's move that special election over to northern Linn County. Mm-hmm. Cindy Golding and Liz Mathis. Your candidate, Mr. Strawn, is Cindy Golding. Why is she the best to represent that district in the Iowa Senate?
Well, Cindy's a fantastic fit for the people of that district.
Why?
Because she's creating jobs there. And she understands right now that that's actually that area of the state, like the entire state and the country. We need people in positions of power and relevance in the Iowa Senate that understand what it takes for small businesses to create jobs, and it's less regulatory burdens. It's a certainty in a tax structure. And Cindy has that background that, quite frankly, we need. What we don't need in the Iowa Senate is one more Democrat vote for one-party rule that has stood in the way of some of Governor Branstad's proposals to start lessening the property tax burden on our small businesses.
How is she going to overcome name recognition?
Hard work.
How?
Hard work. I mean, this is, and I'm sure we'll probably agree on this, this is a race that's going to be won on the ground, and it's going to be won by the people of that district identifying with our candidate on this, and it's knocking doors. It's getting our people out that understand what a 25th vote means in the Iowa Senate.
Mrs. Dvorsky, is that how it's going to be won, or is it going to be won on name recognition, or is it going to be run with shoe leather?
Special elections are always their own animal. They always have the set of factors about that district.
Why can Liz Mathis better represent that district?
She's a sterling candidate with name recognition, but that's not the only reason. Liz Mathis is a fabulous fit for that district. And I would also point out that this special, Ms. Golding doesn't actually live in the new lines. You talked a little bit about the shifting lines, the new lines of Senate District 18. So I think that this month there's going to be enormous shoe leather and all kinds of other resources put into this. And Liz Mathis's election will put her in place to run again in 2012 to to run in a general election, and I think that that is a problem for Ms. Golding up there. I also think that Liz Mathis is a person, it isn't just the name recognition. She is, you know, she left a broadcast career to go to work for Four Oaks and work on children, family, child welfare issues directly, and that's what she works on in the lobby of the State House, and that's what people want to talk about up there. You know, I think we talk about the Senate majority, but I've been on the doors every weekend since this thing happened in Marion. These people, you know, there's nobody living in a regular house in Marion who's thinking about the Senate majority. They're thinking about jobs, school, their kids' welfare.
Thanks.
So.
Mike?
Ron, I was talking to Cindy Golding just this past week, and she made the point that should she win this election, it will not mean a Republican takeover of the Iowa Senate. It will mean a tied Iowa Senate. What happens if there's a tied Iowa Senate? The last time there was a tied Iowa Senate was after a general election in 2004. What happens if it's tied?
Well, I mean, that's a decision the Senate leaders now have to make, the Republican senators working together with Mike Gronstahl and his team to understand what happens in that scenario. But relative to Cindy, you know, I think it is going to be decided on local issues. And it's an economy in Iowa that still needs more impetus in letting small businesses create jobs. It's having a Senate that is actually allowing some things to come up for debate that have come from the Republican House and have come from Governor Branstad's agenda. I think that's the importance of the 25th vote, not just to the people of Iowa, but to the people of that district, and having a voice and having somebody that's a fighter. I mean, if you look at the electorate right now, people are scared. People are nervous. They're nervous about their own economic security. And in Cindy Golding, they have a fighter. They have somebody that's actually gone out there and created jobs in that district. And they understand that you need an aggressive advocate. And that's something that district has had, whether it was Swati Dandekar, whether it was Mary Lundby. It was somebody they knew was going to be a fighter that would do the right thing, regardless of partisan affiliation.
Ms. Dvorsky, the same question to you. And your household has some interest in this, since your husband sits in the Iowa Senate. What happens if it's a tied Iowa Senate? I mean, who picks committee chairs? Who decides what gets debated? What happens?
Well, you know, what happened last time was Stu Iverson got together with Mike Gronstahl, and they worked the thing out. Now, I will say that, there is no, failure is not an option here, so Bob and I don't sit around talking about what's going to happen when they go 25-25, because that isn't going to happen. But this is not Stu Iverson's Republican Senate caucus.
Right.
You know, we just all witnessed, those of us who enjoy this kind of inside baseball conversation, that the Senate Republican caucus is fractured, would be to put it mildly. So I don't know what happens. They will have to figure out who they're going to negotiate with to set up that equal playing field. I just don't think it's going to come to that. I hope it doesn't, because this will not be, it was relatively easy last time. I mean, I remember it as being that, you know, they sat down, they made the deal, 25-25, they had co-chairs of the committees. This is a different climate, so I don't know. That'll be up to Senator Gronstahl and whoever the leader is.
I do not live in Marion, Iowa, but there is door knocking going on in my legislative district because there's a primary coming up and people are actively campaigning for 2012 for House seats. There's been a reapportionment. What is the prospect for party control remaining the same, Mr. Strawn, in the Iowa legislature, or will there be seismic changes?
Well, I'm very confident we'll be able to retain a majority in the Iowa House. Speaker Paulson and Leader Upmeyer have done a fantastic job leading that caucus, and candidate recruitment actually is leaps and bounds compared to where it was even 2 years ago, where we had a great crop that ushered in that majority. So I'm confident that not only will they have the resources at their disposal, but they've got good candidates that are reflective of the communities they're looking to serve. And I think the issue environment, the things we're championing in the Iowa House, are those that resonate with the public, and they understand the need to incentivize private sector, small businesses to create jobs, and actually having a state government that spends less than it takes in, and being prudent stewards of the tax dollars. So I think that all points to keeping the Iowa House majority, and I'm confident we'll get our 25th vote in Marion here in about 4.5 weeks. But then we have the opportunity to add to that with a majority in the Senate as well.
Republicans currently hold a 20-seat majority in the Iowa House. What is the prospect of Democrats even eating into that?
Well, I think that the recruitment, I think, is going great guns on both sides because people really are very interested in this. I think a dynamic that's happening, you've got primary voters up in that district for an open seat. But we know that the Republican caucuses are primarying their own members. Pat Ward is being primaried. if Pat Ward's not enough of a Republican for him, I'm not sure that that conversation is going to go as well as you think it is. Henry Rahans is being primaried down in Garner. And I just think that when you talk about the crop that came in, the group of people that came in last time, I actually think that's going to be a problem for you, because I think that the message is too strident. I think it's too divisive, and I think it's too much on social issues.
Chairman Strawn, let's shift gears just a bit.
Sure.
Probably the hottest congressional race we've got going in Iowa is in the 3rd District, where you have two incumbents, Tom Latham and Leonard Boswell, paired together in the same newly drawn congressional district. Handicap that race for me. These are both veteran incumbents, both proven campaigners.
Yeah, well, there's no question that's one of the marquee matchups, not just in Iowa, but nationally. And I'm very confident where Congressman Latham has his campaign operation right now, and I'm very confident in what we've seen of his leadership in Washington, that he's well-positioned. It will be a hard-fought race, but he is well-positioned to defeat Leonard Boswell.
Ms. Dvorsky, same question to you. Handicap that race. It is clearly the hottest congressional race we've got going in the
state.
Absolutely. And as Chairman Strawn mentioned, it's being watched nationally.
Because it's two incumbents, both of whom are sort of darlings of their leadership, and
right.
A 50-50 registration, essentially. It's a very, very much a bellwether state district. But Leonard's represented those people. He knows those people. We've got the two anchor stores there are Council Bluffs in Pottawatomie County and Polk County, and I like our chances in both those places.
Speaking of darlings of their respective parties, in the other district that has a very competitive race, Steve King, the incumbent Republican, will be likely facing Democrat Kristi Vilsack, the former First Lady of Iowa. How do you handicap that race? Because that is not a registration edge that favors Democrats.
No, it is not, and that's why that district required a candidate like Kristi Vilsack, with the kind of name recognition she's got, with the kind of ability to fundraise, and with the message and the ability to deliver that message. She is an energizer rabbit of a candidate. She always has been. And so she is up there working those 39 counties like nobody's business. That's the kind of candidate we'd have to have.
Mr. Strawn, Congressman King hasn't debated several of his opponents over the past few elections, and he hasn't raised a lot of money in past elections. Is he up to this challenge?
Absolutely, he's up to this challenge, and he'll be successful, not only due to demographic reasons of that district, that it's overwhelmingly Republican, and even the independent voters in that district in a presidential year are right-leaning independent voters. And all the outside money that Kristi Vilsack is raising, she's going to need every penny of that to defend herself and her association with an Obama administration that, quite frankly, people in that part of the state more than any other place are dissatisfied with.
We've under 30 seconds. Yep. One-word answer. Can Barack Obama win Iowa? Chairman Strawn?
Not right now.
Ms. Dvorsky, can Barack Obama win Iowa?
In November of 2012, yes.
Why did you find it necessary to publicly disassociate the Democratic Party from the Citizens for Community Improvement?
We did not dissociate ourselves from CCI. What we dissociated ourselves from was behavior that becomes physically assertive and steps into a space. I am a big champion of Democratic involvement and activism and loud, hard questioning. I've got a reputation for it myself. But stepping into the space, and that's dangerous behavior. We would decry it on the other side, so we had, I think, a moral obligation to decry it on ours.
Thanks so much for being with us today. We're out of time.
Thank you, Dean.
We'll be back next week, another edition of Iowa Press, 7:30 Friday night, 11:30 Sunday morning. I'm Dean Borg. Thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Iowa Bankers Association for personal, business, and commercial needs. Iowa banks help Iowans reach their financial goals.